being duality. Duality is actually an issue we could talk about several lectures. So it will be a lot sketchy today. I will present you some facts that we have to consider and take into account to do our constructions later. And the basic message today will be that the dual to the universal in the Lorentz algebra has to be considered in terms of matrix representations, because we have to stick to finite dimensional representations to define a good coproduct. And this I will sketch today in the duality part. And we need this to consider later the representations we are interested in. So we have again the two types of quantum groups, universal and developing algebra, and functions on the group manifold. And these functions on the group manifold we have actually to break down to actual finite dimensional representations. And that's why we obtain as a dual for the quasi triangular structure that deforms the full product on the U of G has to become a matrix on the other side and the dual for the functions on the group manifold. So, but before we start with duality, I would like to summarize a bit. Last session we understood with a vector space or field K, we can enhance that or consider it enhanced by an algebra, algebraic structure that is given by some multiplication mu and the unit element, or we can enhance it to a co-algebra with co-product. And furthermore, we were going through with constructions. We were plugging these together and saying, well, if these, if the co-product and the full unit enhance to algebra homomorphisms, then we obtain a bi-algebra. And furthermore, with an antipode S, we obtain finally the help algebra. Thus, we had to consider five of algebra axioms. And furthermore, so the co-product and the co-unit had to be enhanced to algebra homomorphism. And we saw at the very end that the antipode S became an anti algebra homomorphism. But this is already, I forgot to say this is already a result from pop algebra axioms. So the antipode axiom is already inducing this property of the antipode. So now, in the very first session, we already encountered duality. And we had this nice picture now let's start with the chapter 3, duality. I will stick a bit to the summary. We had this nice picture of a deformed algebra of functions on manifold M, and it's dual to the algebra of functions on the deformed manifold. Yeah. And we yet did not discuss what happens if we now enhance everything to half algebra. Now we were considering a bit here, we're considering this the full algebra, and of course dually we have here an algebra, but we could also do this vice versa. We could also have here some sort of co-product and then see on the dual what happens there. Do we have some notion of product in turn? So to totally symmetrize this duality, we have to consider the enhancement of Hopf algebras to the dual notion. And this will actually turn out to be a generalization of duality from linear algebra. It's only enhanced for algebras and co-algebras, and this is what I will tell you today and show you today. So here we still have this class. Understand duality relations between F G, where G is again the group manifold, and G of G, the universal developing algebra. And of course, later on, also with their deformations. Yeah. So this notion of duality survives quantization. We quantize one, and therefore quantize the other. It's simply reduced. So this is what we will probably see in the very last session, where I will show you how this notion of duality I will introduce today is used to map the quasi-triangular structure that is deforming the co-product to the Young matrix. You can use this duality notion I will present you today, this enhanced scalar product from linear algebra to do exactly that, to come from one side to the other. This is very important if you want to switch between these two pictures. Sometimes in physics it's much better to have these R matrix expressions. But on the other hand, if you want to locally transform something, you would like to stick to a universal developing algebra. And then you have to know how the quantization is somehow translating between these two pictures. And this will exactly be the topic in the very last session of this course, how we can do this, how this works, and we will give examples for this. But now, well, here we have the example. We were H3, that's just so, and here's FH, our group manifold. And now, what happens in duality is, well, we have here some sort of co-product, may it be deformed or not, and this will be dual to product on this side. And there, as an example, we just so, and this is a relevance for physics now, if we have a non-commutative space here, a representation space, so we have x mu, s mu, we have some deformed product on this side, we already learned that we have here to use the co-product of a generator of U of G to map this invariantly. Yeah. And we already learned that this deformation actually causes here for the deformed Leibniz rule. Now what happens in this picture, we would expect from this deformed co-product to turn here in a deformed product on these functions. Now these functions are chosen to be of a very special kind, because here the functions are indicated like this. They are maps from G to K. And they will map, they will map this to an element of the matrix representation of this function. So this is a very specific function. This is a very specific algebra of functions. And the multiplication in the commutative case will be, well, you simply have two of these functions. You multiply, and you have some T, C, D, prime, something. Yeah. So this is not matrix multiplication. These are functions, as I explained here, and you multiply. And what we'll see later is that we can also define a coproduct here, of T, A, B. And this will actually give us a matrix multiplication, because this will be TA, TC, tensor, TC, TB. Yeah. So the matrix multiplication we have down on the coproduct. And here we have simply some sort of product here between these functions that map on the matrix representation. So what happens here, to come back, if we want to have the dual of this coproduct, it happens that we get, well, if this coproduct was somehow deformed by the use of an element f, h, you don't want to specify this, that is from u of g answered u of g, then we obtain here on this side some element FH that will be a matrix, mu mu, rho sigma, x alpha, x beta, tensor, t rho, t alpha, times sigma beta. So you see, this element here is now conjugating this product, deforming this product, this side. This is a commutative case. This together is a non-commutative case. And therefore implies here a non-commutative structure on the representation space that in turn will be the same as this one. So this is a general plan. And this is why for physics this is so important to have these two pictures. Good. Now, the only thing, well, the main emphasis now today in the lecture is to motivate, not really to explain, but to motivate why we have here matrix representations. We do not have matrix representations here, but we need them here. And I will try to sketch that while we have to do it. And afterwards, we can go on and really consider representations as we would like to get to a non-commutative geometry, and meanwhile have a notion of a quantized symmetry and two dual pictures. And also, in the very last session, we will see how these dualities are related to another, that you can really switch from one side to the other and compute. All right, so section 3.1. I call this a prelude to duality. So, and this prelude will be a very specific example. We'll consider a finite approved. G with the program dot. Yeah. And to give you an idea about this duality I just told you about, we have here some multiplication structure. And I will now show you how with the functions on this group G, you will push the group structure on the co-product structure of the functions. And this is, for the infinite dimensional case, this is what this all is about. So this is a very simple example. And we now consider the algebra of functions. F of G, now a finite group, and for phi, get out this, G to A. Now, what I tell you now is that for this case, we have an isomorphism, F of G, tensor F of G, and functions on G cross G. Yeah. This is, I simply tell you this, this is what we will use. And this is only true for a finite dimensional case. So this virtually means, well, if you have a product of two functions, there's always a function on this side of these two components. And the other way around. So if you have a given function on this side, there's a unique product of functions on this side to do the same job. And this enhances from a vector space isomorphism to an algebra isomorphism. I will not go into detail with this, because what we want is we take a function phi, we take the coproduct of it, and we remember, well, this is something like phi 1 tensor phi 2. Yeah. Now, to make this more specific, we already know that, well, this is somehow a function of two items, g and h, of the group. This is equal to phi of 1 of g tensor phi 2 of g, oops, of h. And this is now the same as having a phi hat on this side of g and h. And it's already a coproduct. That we now define, we now in this very moment define the coproduct, will be the phi, the form of phi of g times h. And there you are. We now have defined a coproduct on the functions, and dually we have exactly this function of the product of two elements of the group. And this is where duality now starts, because now we can push all the group structure through the co-algebra, and this is what I want to show you now. So,
so why did you introduce the phi hat? Why did you introduce the phi hat?
The phi hat? Well, phi hat lives here, while phi lives in FG. And then I define the phi hat in such a way that it's exactly this guy here. It's a very specific, it's a definition, it's really a specific way to define a coproduct. Yeah. This is a very specific example. This has, there's no generality involved here. Yeah. And now to see the duality, we axioms. and see how the group properties are pushed to the coalgebra of F.
When you say the algebra of functions, they're not just any functions, are they? They have to be some functions with particular properties.
We'll later on, well, for instance, there, well, what you do is here, you map to every element of the group, you map a number.
Right, but I mean, they have to be homomorphisms of the group or something. Otherwise, we can't have this isomorphism between those two sets of functions.
Well,
they can't just be any function.
I see what you mean. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know the exact answer to that, but the group. Well, what we actually do is now to transfer these group properties to the copula, yeah. And thereby obtain the structure. And what we'll do later is to linearize f of g, that we get a so-called group algebra from the finite group that I introduced here. But for instance, the functions are introduced in exactly this way. It's not enhanced to some algebra homomorphism. And this isomorphism is we have these two functions for phi 1 of g. Transfer phi 2 of h, this is transferred by this isomorphism to the product phi 1 of g times phi 2 of h.
But you can't go the other way around if they're just general functions.
Why do you think?
Because there's a lot more functions on the.
It's a finite group, you really have. You can here consider a basis of n square elements. It's n square numbers here on the side, the basis. And you have to relate it to a basis here where you have here n numbers and here n numbers.
So that's two n, so there aren't things like
that. Yeah.
So it's just general functions.
Now, checking the coalgebra axioms, we take this. Phi, so this is an entire function of g, h, and k. And now we apply exactly this rule here. That this coproduct is introducing a multiplication of the other way around. So we push the multiplication with coproduct now. And this means that here, the coassociativity corresponds to the associativity in the group multiplication. So this is phi of g times h times k. Now, we take the group property, associativity. This is equal to phi g times h times k we again identify with the other axioms. So there's identity, and so and we do it the same way with a co-unit axiom, identity tensor co-unit after phi. This is one function. We have here to declare what the co-unit is. Co-unit of function phi will be defined as phi of the unit element. So the co-unit axiom will now bring us the two-sided unit element of the group, reflect us the two-sided element of the group. So this equals to over phi g unit element. This equals phi over g. This equals phi of 1 over phi 1 comma g. And the antipode will now deliver us, actually, will reflect now the inverse element from the group.
G and H, or just of G? Should that be of G and H, or just of G? Should that come in one of
This is a function of g and h.
Where does the h go? There should be an h. It should only act on one function. No?
Now, what happens?
It should only act on g.
You, with a co-unit, you sort of say transform the h to the one element. It's a bit difficult with the notations. It's a bit clumsy. And then one again pushes out to some element over there, because it's actually the one element. It's always transformed to the one element, so you can hope for H whatever you like. Wait. Now we have. That's what I mean. This way. So we have copyright phi from g comma h. This is phi of g times h. And then again you apply this one. So identity tensor co-unit. So you act with this on this side, so I enhance identity tensor unit co-unit element on phi of g times h. You add components on the components. This transfers you this h to one element.
In the middle of the reverse equation, you should have phi g dot h. Otherwise, how could you get the h back? H comes nowhere. No, just in the previous equation, in the center, in the middle of the equation, have phi of g.
Yeah. You should have R-H-E dot H. Why not, like, wouldn't you be able to just take G-dot-H dot 1 and have it before you get an act on 1 so that you keep G-and-H? Mm. Well, I want to do is now to reverse here the order and then push to the other side of the co-unit axiom that you can reverse the, yeah? So what I want to say is just that this, again, is the same as 1 times g. And you can consider this to be, again, an action of an element where these two components are reversed, hence our identity of phi of h times g, if you want to.
But then how do you assure that it's h, not something else?
Can be
anything.
What you like, because you're actually only using it as one element.
But you're showing it's the isomorphism, and the map is not one for one.
What kind of tensor acts on the single file? What kind of tensor, ID tensor E, acts on the single file?
Theoretically, you shouldn't actually make it 5g dot h until after you back out the tensor. You should have 5g cross 5h, act of id cross e, and then change it to the product.
Yeah, and then you use that property which you load up there, and you just multiply by 5-1, and then you can use the 5s.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So,
that's true.
I guess just
That's a good point. Yeah. So what you keep here in mind is that you always also have the structure that you have here involved for the co-product. Still, the phi-1, phi-2, this expression is what you mean. And since they map into the field, you can exchange them here. And this is what is going on here. Yeah. All right. Now we get the same for the antipodal thing. So here we again use this picture here. Now the antipode will map us to the function phi 1. G minus 1 and to the inverse limit here. So, 5 G to the minus 1 times 5 G of G. Now, again, we can transfer to the picture using isomorphism to go to F of G times G with this particular distribution. So we pull out the co-product. It's equal five g to the minus 1 times g equal 5-1. And this you can also do in reverse by exchanging these two components. It doesn't really depend on that. Okay. Now let's turn, so this is a very specific example here for a finite group. And I now want actually to come to reality. And recall what duality in linear algebra means. So for finite dimensional vector space, there exists the dual V-span with a such a set of linear functionals, so phi of plus V star, phi is the maximum V to A, so the V kind of so, and now the important thing now is this is one specific way to make the notation. But what we'll see later, we will also call this phi of V later. We are not yet in this position. But this is what it will turn out. And so we have a specific kind of algebraic functions here on this side. And then see exactly that what happened here, that we have here some algebraic property that's due to the co-algebraic property on the phi's. So these are two ways of notations that I will take use simultaneously. Just to keep clear, and this is a very basic idea here, to have to have these two notations to understand this as a sort of scalar color that later on will be generalized for algebraic notions. And so what happens is we will not call this a scalar product then, but it is called a dual pairing. And that happens that, well, if we have such a dual pairing, it happens that if we have a co-product, C to C tensor C, on the dual side, will deliver us a product that I call, well, that I take the same symbol and put the star on it. And this will be a multiplication. And on the other hand, we have an algebra where a multiplication is defined. And this should somehow deliver us a co-product in this way. Well, these are stars, because it shall be the dual to this algebra here. We can here a star, a star, tensor, star. Well, this is what we hope. But for the infinite dimensional case, what happens is that we get this. And, well, this raises some problems because this. We cannot distinguish, well, what does this mean? So we here understood that the co-product will deliver us a sort of matrix multiplication. But for this, we have really be able to distinguish these tensor components. So this is a very nasty situation, yeah, that we actually find a map into this object, whereas we would like to have something like this guy here. And this is solved by going from a general notion to a finite dimensional representation where this is broken down. So this guy is dense in the former. And going to finite dimensional representations changes that. H and B are called dually paired such that by tensor psi comma coproduct of B equals. So to define what this means, we have here phi pair of phi with B, first component of the coproduct, times psi, the second component. And furthermore, we have to say what the one element is doing. So one element will be, shall be the co-union of B. Now, to symmetrize this expression, we get the same structure now for the component B. So if we have phi, pair of phi, and B times C, this shall again be coproduct of phi, psi, B times C. And again, for the one element, we have phi, one element, yes. Yes. can happen that you obtain some problems to define a non-degenerate pairing, and then one can rewrite out. So one, so to say, it takes the kernel of this pairing and takes one of the Hopf algebras to divide out by this kernel, and therefore, thereby, obtain a non-degenerate pairing. So degeneracy means you have a degenerate pairing. This means that we have non-zero phi and h d. But nevertheless, the pairing of these two is equal to zero. And so what one does is to divide out divide H by kernel to obtain what we do now is to linearize these functions in the finite group. So we go back to this case for functions on the finite group. We linearize this in order to obtain exactly this idea over there. Because, well, if we have general functions, it doesn't work. So we have to linearize just to get this equality. This is what we have to enhance or to restrict these functions to interpret them as dual pairings. By linearizing, this means well, this means we have some scalars times a phi of an element g plus mu times phi of an element h. So linearizing means, of course, that we have some phi lambda g plus mu h. But this, well, here we somehow have to define what is a multiplication of a scalar with a group element. This is not clear yet, so we're considering G simply to be a finite group. There's no multiplication of scalars. And moreover, there's no summation of elements. We only have defined a product. So one can, if one can enhance the structure of the group by multiplication of scalars and adding two elements, then we'll talk about a group algebra that is called GK, the group algebra. So if this is possible. So for example, if you have, you can express your group G in terms of matrices, you have exactly this equation. And this also enhances to a Hopf algebra. So we have cofact of element G is equal to G tensor G. And you have a co-unit G being the unit element, being 1, sorry, being 1. And S of G for G minus 1 inversely. And this is called the group like type So now for, if we now go to functions and f and gk, we can construct linear combinations. So now an element h, and it does, and the coefficients h of gi, where the gi are the elements of the group times gi. This is the general element of gk. And we now are able to define, to clearly define the pairing here to be exactly. And this is the structure we will use all the time. This is the structure, so much structure we really need. And so you can also choose a basis. You have normalized this. So keep this in mind. This is very important for all we do in the next part. This is always behind our repetitions.
H of gi is just essentially like a coefficient in a series of bases for.
Yeah, it's a. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, you summarize a little bit what happened just in the last few lines. So, you said that we needed to. If we have a generic pairing, we need to divide out by the kernel, and that's okay. But then, what's the. What's the relationship between that and the fact that we have to linearize f g?
Well, we want to define a pairing. And on the group itself, we cannot do this now because we do not have enough structure on the group. We want to have some linear expression. We want to have linear functions. But the group doesn't support something that that enables linearity on the functions.
Okay,
so we have to add structure to the group. Maybe it's not always possible, but we only can consider then the case where this is possible to do. Yeah. For these constructions, we want to consider later on. So some preparation for this, what we actually want to do later. And there we have these properties. So now the example that actually interests us. The dual pairing for U of G. Well, I understand it's very much structure that I brought down.
So in the linear structure, you assume all the loop elements to be in an independent
part
when you linearize the group. We assume all the group elements to be linearly independent.
Yes, who knows? Maybe one has to see what one can construct. Maybe it also happens that they are dependent. I don't know what to do in this case. But here, we consider those cases where they're really linearly independent. Yeah. If they are not, one, of course, has to discuss a bit further to get it in such a case. We could also not work this down somehow. We want some sort of completeness. So because we cannot push through duality from one side to the other if there's linear dependence. Mm-hmm.
Just really a question. We have 3.1. Is there 3.2?
Good question. Yes. 3.2. That's good. Yeah. So what we want to do now, we really want to consider this case here. And it will be only some sort of motivation. Yeah? Just want to show you how one can get from a a product from the dual. How this is technically done. It's simply one more example how one technically gets the product here. Now, I want also to show you how one could, in principle, also in the same way derive here the co-product on the dual, but there it happens that we end up here. This part I will not explain in detail why this happens. It's simply like, how a series of rational numbers also does not converge in rational numbers, but real numbers. It's quite the same, so we have to break this down for the matrix representation. So a co-product on G of G implies a product star on something that we now call U of G star. So whatever it is, we call it this way. It's a dual. And we have the co-product U of G. We have the co-product given on the generators. We have G1 tensor 1 plus 1 tensor 2. And the basis now for this, these are, for example, the monomials. All monomials here can be written in such a way. So we have Gn vector, where n is we have the p dimensions, and p root 0. Yeah, so it's a p-dimensional V algebra here, and this is equal to G1 to the M1 by the period of N times G2 to the period, and so forth, Gk to the M1 period. So it's a general monomial, and we can now apply the co-product to that and derive what we get out of this. This, so it's simply a computation. Take the co-product of such an element, and we get the result that this is equal to k 0. So every vector k from 0 vector to that all combinations you might get there, gk answer g and minus. So now we assume to have a basis for u star. Such that pairing is normalized. If I have a G equal vector N,
your Gn, when you here, you're multiplying these G's together, right?
Yes. These are the powers of the generators, and I multiply them.
So that means that this whole GN is simply just a group, one of the group's elements, not even a sum of the group's elements, one of the group's elements multiplied by, divided by some function.
This is a monomial out of U of G. U of G is to say the set of power series in the generators of the algebra subject to the commutation relations. Yeah?
Okay,
so we choose here one specific ordering, and then we know, due to the Frank-Rebic-Witt theorem, that this is the basis.
But so how would you, how does the co-product apply on this thing? Is it the sum, and then you first apply it on the first one, then you apply it on the second one, then you apply it on, and you sum them all together?
Yeah, you can do it as you like. And this is because we introduced co-associativity. And this means that it doesn't depend on what element you first apply the formula. You can do it as you like, because we ensured for co-associativity. Yeah. So, so you simply start somewhere, and then at the very end you can multiply everything, because we have co-associativity. You could also do it the other way around, or some way around, and multiply everything together, you will get the same result. Yeah. So it's like multiplying doesn't depend on the brackets. Co-multiplying doesn't depend on which component you apply first.
Well, what I mean is that the equation for applying it on a product is
The Leibniz rule we'll find later. What is, you mean this
thing? What is the co-product of G1 times G2, is my question.
Oh, yes, this is the homomorphic property. The co-product of G1 times G2 is equal to co-product of G1 times co-product of G2. And for the universal enveloping algebra, this is reflected by the condition, well, the coproduct of G1, the commutator of the coproduct of G1, coproduct of GJ, shall be the same as the coproduct of the commutator. Yeah. So this reflects this property. And this one, really has to check, this was the homework assignment of Friday to check that. Yeah. Now,
it's such a curious that this P which constrains the monomial, but we call it GN, if let's say N G plus 3 and we'll plus
sorry, I don't understand. I mean, if n equals 3, how about this here? So here
you have a p tuple. Okay.
All right. Okay. With this preliminaries, you can now apply the definition of the dual pairing in such a way that, well, we already have our co-product. We already have a dual pairing. And now we can push the co-product to to a product from the sign. This is what I want to compute for you now, at the example of your gene. So we start with an onset, the phi L bar times phi M bar, and the co-product, so the product here, something like the co-product, GM. So this pair equal sum is 0. So we constantly insert this guy. And this delivers us phi of r times phi l g n. So I inserted, I used this equation here, and simply brought down the result. And this, of course, due to normalization, gives you 0 and R and simply insert everything. Now we manipulate a bit. This is equal to delta M bar minus L bar. And now we do the crucial step just to get our product. We write it in such a way that this is the same as having the following delta M plus L M bar. This again we can interpret as a pairing of basis elements in M bar plus L bar GM, such that here we had some sort of ansatz for our product on the files. And now we derived what is the correct product structure on this side that suits to this co-product. Yeah. And this means that on the dual, we have to have a product phi L phi M equal to phi M bar plus L. That's very nice. This already shows you the general product structure that we expect from, for example, from unitary representations of groups, of Lie groups. And of course you see, well, this is a Lie group, I multiply them, and this adds up here in the exponent. Well, this is a billion. This is a billion Lie group here on the side. And this is exactly the case, because here we have co-commutative co-products on this side. And you just recall from the very beginning a deformation of the co-product here induces on the dual part a non-commutative product. Yeah. And then, well, deforming the co-product over there would not lead to such a simple rule of multiplication as we obtained here. Yeah. So this is how duality for U of G looks in real life. If we deform here the co-product, this duly means to deform the product on this side. Now, we can also do it the other way around. So let's assume, let's obtain a co-product I, M bar, and U, G star from the product and U, G. So what we performed so far is, well, we have here, right here, U, G, U star G. Now we started here in the co-product, and therefore got the product on this side being revealed. And what we try now to do is we have here the product and get to the co-product on the view. So just the other thing. If we take these monomials and multiply two of them, GL times GM, this is equal to the product, K equals 1, GP of K. Divided by K factorial and K factorial times basis element GL plus M bar. And we abbreviate this notation to say this is a binomial coefficients of these couples plus M bar over. Good. Now we try to do the same thing as over there. Oh, we search. Yep.
You wrote LK and MK, and where is MK and?
Yeah, sorry. So the L tuple is L1, L2, LK, LK. And these are the components. So this only component line, that's why we get this component. Get the product of these objects, we get them from the periods here defined on the monomials. And this only is some sort of realization.
So the GL bar plus the bar should get multiplied.
I simply apply, sorry, this is now for the case, G abelian. sorry, forgot that point. Won't be that easy. This will not be the case. Yeah. And now we do the same. Phi and bar. G R bar times G M bar. Evaluate, we plug in this product, that's M bar.
What do you make G abelian? G is a linear
algebra. Yes, G is linear.
So what do you add abelian?
Well, it's a product. Well, U of G. Okay.
But isn't the bracket then the Lie bracket the limit? The Lie bracket is equal to
Yes, yes.
Also to where you got
yeah. G2J is equal to 0. Commutative.
Could you always assume G, the group G or the reaction G are again in
both? No. This is simply a very specific example just to show you how products push to co-products and how maybe co-products push to products on the field. Simply one specific example. If I take something non-abelian here, I'm much more bothered about multiplying these items than showing to make them to make clear the point. Okay. And this we can rewrite in such a way that some. This means that that we obtain co-product IL. So we read off that the co-product looks like this. Here to contract to the co-product, to have here the product between these two items as just over there. All right, so what one can't see here, but what happens is that if we now take a general element, capital phi, through G, and consider it to be a power series of power series of such elements. If we take the co-product of capital I, this converges in U of G tensor U of G star. And what we actually want to have is that we have this co-product converge in something as U of G star tensor U of G. You cannot see it here from the formula. In principle, it's simply computed as before this guy. But this is what actually happens there. You know?
capital 5 should be in U star G?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And this is what happens. Now, there's a quite simple cure. That's a subset Q0 of G from Q star of G. And that is actually a Hopf algebra. It's a true subset. And here, for this case, the coproduct has a desired property that's from U0 of G to the tensor product is G. And it closes as a Hopf algebra. And the interesting point now is that U0 of G as a Hopf algebra is isomorphic to representations, finite dimensional representations of U star of G. So this is what we do now. This is why we consider all the time these matrix representations. This is why we will later stick to functions of this very specific kind that map elements of the group to their matrix elements here. This is why we consider this case. This is why we stick to our matrix on the dual to get everything clear on the side. And that's it for today. Thank you.